It's February the 11th, and this is the AR subscription call for the Affair Recovery Library. We have two questions today, so let's go ahead and get started. First question. I really appreciate the practice element, as I believe that has held us together. Is there any way to incorporate all three of these attributes into the EMSO online sessions? I believe my wife is still stuck in the obstinate spouse role, having had an affair with the same AP twice for 20 years between the affairs. She still has not faced completely what she's done and understood how wrong it was. And since she knows I will do nothing to destroy the marriage, she's content to let things ride. We've been in the program where goals were set, and she refused to set a goal, so there's no path to follow in recovery. She's with me at EMSO now, but only doing the minimum work in a I'll-do-what-I-have-to attitude. I feel we're floundering and will continue to flounder without meaningful goal or path we set for ourselves. Just staying together is possible, but would not be a happy outcome. How can I show her commitment makes our lives together more valuable to both of us and to our families? Now, my first thought is that last piece, how can I show her that commitment makes our lives together more valuable to both of us? I mean, certainly when we're invested in a relationship, the value of that relationship increases for us. I mean, the more I invest, the more value it takes on for myself. But I also think, and I think if you'll read the newsletter titled Monotonous Monogamy that's coming out this week, I believe that there are things that we have to do to maintain passion in a relationship. Otherwise, it's too easy for relationships to become monotonous. And we begin to believe that things can't change, we won't change, our mate won't change, and those are the things that you ultimately have to begin to break out of. I would suggest at one level, and maybe you've already done some sort of marital counseling, but breaking the roles and finding new ways of relating to each other is going to be really important. It's and I like what you said, it's the practice element. It's a matter of beginning to do it different, not just talking about it, but beginning to do it and having new visions and new goals. Hopefully, you know, as you both go along, you can find reasons to begin to do that. And I would suggest potentially, you know, find a good therapist who can help you find a new pathway. The fact that she's even doing EMSO with you, to me, states that or says at one level, she's certainly trying to do what's necessary to begin moving forward. Take time, though, to, I think, rebuild that trust, her to you and you to her, for her to begin to see things differently. From her perspective, the only other thing I could suggest might be doing something like Hope for Healing, where she could be supported by other people and maybe see other pathways that way. And for you, you know, doing something like Harboring Hope, just making sure that in the ways that you're responding to her, that you're not an issue or you're not doing things that make her moving towards you difficult. So here's our second question. Do you have any insight why a husband refused to have sexual intercourse with his wife more than 5 times over 4 years after the affair had ended? Other sexual acts are accepted. It was an emotional and sexual entanglement with plans to exit the marriage, but for family and religious reasons, he agreed to stay instead. Before the affair, the sexual relationship was very healthy and connected. You know, to begin, without doing, I think, an extensive sexual history, it would be difficult to state. The only thing that I feel almost safe saying, so I don't want to speculate too much on this, but frequently an affair causes a shift in what we call the sex role scripts. And when those sex role scripts shift, then there's a good chance that it's not going to be as pleasurable or exciting or enticing as it had once been. I would wonder and even challenge the couple to look at what was the sex role script prior to the affair and how did that script change and what is the script now. A lot of times you can begin to discover that things are radically different as they came back together, and it may not be something as exciting. Two other possibilities. One could be, and I said I wouldn't do this, but I'll go ahead and do it. One potentially could be resentments toward his mate, which obviously that's a desire killer. If you're saying other things are okay, which the only other one would be that there's still a connection to the affair partner and he feels disloyal in having intercourse with his mate. As strange as that sounds, occasionally I see that, but I'm surprised that it would still be there 4 years post-affair. So hopefully that'll give at least three areas to begin to look at. And that being said, that's all of our information today, all of our questions. So I do hope everybody will keep those questions coming, and I look forward to talking to you guys next week. And I hope everybody has a great Valentine's. The healing. Hello, everybody. This is Rick, and you're listening to the EMS Online Q&A call on Monday, February the 4th, 2013. So let's move on to our first question. Rick, what are your thoughts about an unfaithful spouse who doesn't grieve in an emotionally visible way over the pain they caused their hurt spouse? Verbally, the words of compassion are present when the subject is brought up by the hurt, but the unfaithful is not taking a lead role in the recovery of the couple. They seem to be more private and individualistic in doing their recovery work. Why could that be? Should it be different? I guess to begin, I would say it's hard to say that there's exactly one path. I mean, obviously there are some signs there that would lead me to have a little concern, because ultimately what you want to see in true sorrow, or what we might call godly sorrow, is grief. Grieving over what they've done to their mate, grieving over what they've done to another person. My first thought when someone does this is they're still concerned maybe about what their own shame, what they've done, what it's cost them. Potentially they also might, and trust me, I'm just guessing here because I can't guess everything, but they may also be feeling a lot of guilt. And so when people move into guilt and shame, they tend to make it about them. It could also be that they've never really developed empathy skills, and in a situation like that, it's good that they're taking EMS online simply because it allows them to begin to think about how they've impacted their mate and begin to consider something beyond themselves. I mean, ultimately, it's about relationship and about learning to love. And this is why frequently infidelity can be a great thing, not that it's a good thing ever, but in the sense of failure teaches us to try something different. And this may help this person. The last thing I'll say is if they have resentments, then there's a possibility they're not responding to their mate as a result of those resentments, and learning to forgive and letting go of the anger they may have toward their mate could remove the block they have toward responding to their mate. In other cases I've known like this, sometimes it's taken as long as 8 years for them to ultimately get it. If the marriage is doing well and they're making progress, then I think there's good reason to have hope. If, on the other hand, they're continuing to put themselves in high-risk situations and don't really see that big of a problem, then that would raise concern. Here's our second question. Rick, do you have any insight as to why a woman would feel men are only interested in her for sexual reasons, to the point where she does not make eye contact with men because she feels it's sending them the wrong message? There's a history of sexual abuse, although she's gone through years of counseling. She feels as though men see something in her that they don't in other women, like she's a target, or has some sort of vibe that she sends out to men. Is that possible? What confuses and upsets her also is she admittedly feels a sort of high from the attention she gets from these men. It all comes down to a belief system. I think that when someone gets to the place where they're thinking more about what other people are thinking about them than what they're thinking about the other people, that at one level, the wounds that she's received may cause her to be more self-focused. I mean, I think it's true for men and for women. A common thought from a lot of sex addicts is when a woman makes eye contact, and this is sex addicts, not men in general, they'll think she wants to have sex with me. But it's interesting to me that on the other side of that same coin, if she's thinking that when men look at her, they want to have sex with her, it's the same sort of distorted belief system. And if she can learn the truth, and she may know the truth, then she needs to make the conscious effort to change that belief system. Because as long as we continue to just believe what we feel or feel, because our feelings will always reflect our beliefs, as long as she continues to believe something that's not true, then she'll continue in that pattern. Knowing the truth won't change it. It's going to be changing the belief. And beginning to think maybe more highly of others, maybe more highly of God, and in some ways, less highly of herself. Humility is understanding, I think, in a lot of ways, you're not all that. I've even heard it said humility is having a very high view of God, which changes your view of yourself and changes your view of others. It's about having compassion toward others, not trying to control or manipulate others. If we're trying to avoid eye contact oftentimes, and I'm not saying you want to give out wrong signals, but if we're trying to control and manipulate others, then a lot of times it's not about compassion and loving others. It's about, trying to get what we want from others. One last thing on this particular one. When someone is sexually abused, oftentimes they do have a distorted view of what they're good for, what their identity is, and sometimes that's the core of that belief. So I would hope she could challenge that belief and come to see things a new way. Here's the next question. Does there ever come a point in recovery for someone who has a sex/love addiction tendencies where that pull feeling goes away? I guess pull means temptation, or is that just part of the rest of your recovery? I know you say temptation doesn't define us, but it feels like betraying just to feel tempted towards something you know is totally self-destructive and selfish. Can we ever really change 180 degrees 100% of the time? I mean, I think that's a really good question. I think a lot of times if people over time begin to shift the belief system, just like someone who believes that if someone looks at them, then they see them a certain way, shifting beliefs will oftentimes totally eliminate temptation. Over time, being concerned for others and learning to live well eliminates temptation. I believe that at one level, though, even if you get the temptation to go away because you've begun focusing and believing something different, our old habits of how we think are very much like riding a bicycle. While they may be gone, we can always reenact or activate those old ways of being or thinking. They still exist in our basal ganglia. For that reason, relapse prevention is terribly important. And when I relapsed 5 years into recovery, it was because I allowed myself to pick up old patterns that I had eliminated in my life. And honestly, the temptation had completely gone away. So I do know that that's possible. Now, is it possible for a lifetime? Only if one continues to try to master life and to live well, to stay focused on the right things, continually trying to improve. If we let up our guard and we stop those activities of good living, of living well, if we get in really difficult situations and don't continue to press forward, they will come back. So I hope that answers the question. And I would say yes, but be sure you continue doing what you need to do, because if you allow yourself back into old ways of being, then you can fall back into those old habits. Final question. Rick, in your experience, would you say that two very prominent catalysts to having an affair would be undiagnosed depression and or anxiety, since affairs, even if you are not a sex addict, create similar feelings to using drugs? Absolutely. For some people, the good feelings that come from that behavior certainly can serve as an amazing antidepressant. I don't know that people particularly do that on purpose, but just the fact that if someone's feeling down, it can make them feel better, certainly would be one of the motivators that makes people move that way and would make it appealing, because we want to feel alive. And oftentimes, if people haven't continued doing the disciplines of connecting with their mate and growing and that skill development, you can become lonely. And the fact that something begins to break in on that depression or that loneliness leaves us open to trying new things. I mean, again, like I say, it's as long as the relationship is giving you everything you want, it's pragmatically smart to do the right thing. However, when the blessings of that relationship begin to subside, or you're not getting what you want and life is hard, it won't be long until the allure of something else can come along and to help with the doldrums and to help with that boredom or that depression. So those are great questions today. Thank you, everybody. And I look forward to talking with you later. I hope everybody has a great week. I'll be talking to you in 2 weeks. The Healing.